Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Cofinimmo Annual Consolidated Results 2012 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Jean-Edouard Carbonell. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being on this call. We've released the 2012 annual result this morning, and we've seen already a number of reactions from analysts on the screens. We have here Xavier Denis, our COO, Marc Hellemans, our CFO, as well as Françoise Roules, our General Legal Counsel, and the communication and investor relations staff. I will start by giving a short introduction, then Xavier will describe a little bit what we did in 2012 regarding real estate, and Marc will walk you through the financials, and we conclude with the outlook. Then we'll have a question session. In a summary, we have achieved our target for 2012 regarding net current results. We are somewhat above our expectation. An important point is that our redeployment strategy is working in such a way that we have a positive like-for-like for the global portfolio, with the growth in value of the new sector offsetting the decrease in value of some properties in the office portfolio, where we have some works to do to renovate these properties in the coming years. We have confirmed the dividend for 2012 payable this month of May 2013 at 6.50 euros, which represents a payout of 85%, and that leaves us with slightly more than 1 euro in profit carried forward. Average lease length remains high at 11.7 years. Important to stress that the refinancing of the 2013 maturities are already in place, and that we have recently, in the last few days, signed or at least concluded new contracts for 100 million to face the refinancing of 2014. We have raised equity during this year 2012, which was not an easy year in the first part, at least regarding financial markets. New equity funds were coming either from the sale of treasury share or from the optional dividend for a total amount of 70 million. The LTV ratio has decreased somewhat by 30 basis points. The average interest rate also has decreased somewhat by 9 basis points. And the main message that you probably all were expecting is a forecast for 2013. We have set the goal at 7 euros as for the net current result, excluding IAS 39 per share, which is 61 cents below the level of 2012. The reasons for that will be explained in a short while. And our board of directors, who met yesterday evening or afternoon, decided to propose a somewhat lower dividend per share for 2013, payable in 2014, maintaining a profit carried forward of 1 euro per share, which will be used to reinforce the structure of our balance sheet. I now hand over to Xavier, who will go through the investment and divestment of the year.
Yes, so regarding investment in the healthcare sector, we can start with the establishment of an institutional SICAVI in co-investment with Signoras. That's for a total volume of 150 million euro. All these properties have long-term contracts, 27 years, and indexed rents. Second point is regarding the partnership agreement we have with Orpea. We've made our first investment for a total value of 22 million euro with a 12-year triple net contract. Third element, that's the Netherlands, so that's the third country where we invest in the healthcare sector. We started this investment phase with a private clinic specialized in orthopedics. The total volume is almost 12 million euro, and there we have a 15-year lease indexed with strong incentives for an extension of 10 years, which basically we expect to happen. Then the fourth element in the healthcare sector is extensions and developments in Belgium. We did that for a total amount of 30 million, and all these extensions and new developments have also 27-year indexed contracts. Now, if we move to the public-private partnerships and the distribution property networks, we can also confirm that we've made the investment in the police station in Dendermonde. There we have an 18-year lease contract with the buildings agency, so the Belgian federal state, for a total volume of 16 million euro and an initial gross yield of 7%. Maybe something to add to this investment is that we have excellent energy performance with an E of 12, which is a lot better than the legal requirements. Then for the distribution property networks, two small investments in the context of the MAF partnership, so that's only for a total of 400,000 euro, also with 12-year indexed leases. Now, if we move to divestments, two points there. First is regarding insurance branches, still in the MAF context. We sold two insurance branches for almost 1 million euro, which basically gave us the opportunity to materialize a 10% above last investment value margin, which gives us comfort regarding the reasonable approach that we took on the valuation of this portfolio. We've noticed also the same thing in the Pubstone context, where we sold six pubs in Belgium for a total of 2.4 million euro and also realizing a 10% margin above the last investment value of end 2011. So if we move to the office reconversion projects, two important projects. The first is called Livingstone 1. It's a  17,000 square meter project, used to be rented to Dexia Insurance. There we are basically converting the whole property into 122 residential units. Permit was granted, and we've actually covered our risk entirely by selling this existing structure to Cordeel for a total of 24 million euro. So it means that there, basically, we are out of our risk on this project for a fixed amount. Second project is the Woluwe 34. It's a smaller project. It's 7,000 square meters. There we are. We've submitted planning application. We expect to have a planning consent by April. It's a conversion of an office building into 69 residential units. The budget is 11 million euros, so as I said, quite smaller than the previous one. And there we have 16% of the project that is already reserved in the pre-commercialization phase, and we expect in the next week to reach 25%. Timing for the works is  2013,  2014. That was all for me on the real estate side.
Regarding financial resources, we've been active in  2012, both on the debt side as on the equity side. On the debt side first, we managed to sign a new syndicated loan in the beginning of 2012 for 220 million, a 5-year maturity. And in the second part of the year, we did a private placement for 140 million with a maturity of 7.5 years and a bond and a coupon of 3.55%. The average maturity of the debt increased to 3.8 years, and thanks to these two facilities, we have been able to refinance before the end of the year all the maturities of 2013. Like Jean mentioned at the beginning of the call, we succeed in the last 7 days to conclude two bilateral bank credit lines for a total of amount of 100 million. These have been signed in January 2013 and start the work of refinancing the maturities of 2014. It is indeed something which changed a little bit the politics of the company, who used to refinance 12 months in advance its facilities. Thanks to these two refinancing, we are a little more in advance of what we've done in the past. Regarding the equity, we sold treasury shares and did a stock dividend in 2012. We gathered together 70 million euro of equity. The debt portfolio, the objective of the company was to be able to diversify more its source of funding. We diversified from the bank facilities to the bond markets. In the beginning of 2012, the bank facilities represented 60% of the debt, which now stands at 47% of the debt. Thanks to the private placement mainly. Cost of the debt stands at 4.11%, and we have also sufficient headroom towards most of our covenants as the debt ratio is at 49.9%. The LTV covenant is only applicable on 5% of financial commitments of the company. Page 12, the maturity schedule shows that, like I said, 2013 is fully refinanced, and we have already started to do part of the job for 2014. The remaining 300 million to be refinanced for 2014 will be an equilibrium between access to bond markets and bank facilities. We have now, as mentioned on slide 13, 765 million available, which will be used to cover the CP program, the maturities of 2013, and the pipeline. Page 15 now, let's talk about the key operational indicators of the company. The portfolio stands at 3.3 billion at the end of 2012 in fair value. Residual risk term, 11.7 years, thanks to the investment we have made in the last years. We are one of the highest residual risk term company in continental Europe. Occupancy rate, 95.7%, and on the office portfolio, we still have a quite stable occupancy rate below 92% at 91.6%. As you can see on the breakdown of the portfolio, the rebalancing continues. We were at 100% offices in 2005, and since that, we've been able to diversify the investment of the company with 35% in healthcare and now 46% in the office segment. Page 16 shows the impact of the diversification and the fact that the increase of the residual lease length is mainly coming from healthcare and distribution network. You see also on the most important client of the company that AB InBev, Korian, Harmonia, Senior Living Group are also coming from this segment, while on the office side, the Belgian public sector and the international public sector are also present and gathering 40% of the office tenants. The like-for-like on page 17 is positive for 2012, 0.6%. Positive contribution, of course, from indexation, but also from new lettings in the office portfolio. The office portfolio is like-for-like is negative by 1.6%. New lettings are not compensating the negative reversion of the renegotiations and the departure of tenants. On the other segments, you can see that the figures are positive and mainly coming from indexation. Page 18, the financial figures themselves and the ratio. I think the most important figures is the net current result group share excluding IAS 39, 100,021.8 versus 113.2 in 2011. Regarding the ratio, quite stability among all of them. Operating cost expense ratio, I would say, 0.87%. Operating margin, very close to 85%. Average cost of debt decreased compared to 2011 thanks to an increased size of the CP program. Debt ratio at 49.9, which was the objective of the company for the end of 2012, and LTV at 51.2. Per share, it gives us a net current result of 7.61 versus a forecast of 7.47, which is also an increase vis-à-vis 2011. The result on the portfolio is quite neutral for 2012. It stands at 3 cents per share. The net results, including IAS 39, stands at 6.12 euro per share. NAV, 92.2 euro per share, an increase of 2.8% versus 2011. The valuation results on page 20. The graph on the right side shows that the diversification process has enabled us to substantially improve the portfolio results. As you can see, starting from 2008, where the decline, and 2009, where the decline was 63 and 64 million, with the increasing size of the healthcare segments and distribution network, this decrease slowed, and since 2012 we have a positive figure of 12.2 million. If we analyze that by sector, of course offices represent a negative figure of 2.2%, but on average, thanks to the other segments, we have a positive figure of 0.37%. The yield situation on page 21 shows that quite stability. There is a slight increase in the office yields, of course, 7.69, but the other yields on the diversification segments are quite stable. You can see also in the bottom of the page 21 that even though there is a substantial difference in terms of gross yield if we take offices versus the other segments, on the net yield the difference is much lower, consists of roughly 30 to 40 basis points. On aggregate, a net yield of 6.55. Dividend for 2012 and 13 were both or 6.50, The dividend for 2012 will be paid in 13.6 pounds 50, like in 2012. We'll raise the point of the dividend of 2013 paid in 2014 in the outlook. Situation in the stock market, just two graphs to show the relative performance of Cofinimmo vis-à-vis EPRA and BEL 20. Total return of 6.1% in 2012, and the comparison between share price and NAV, which stands now with a discount of less than 3%. NAV is at 92.2, with the stock price close to 90 euro per share. I will let Jean talk about the outlook.
Well, before we talk about the outlook for the year, a quick presentation of our investment pipeline. In total, we foresee investments of 268 million, of which 143 million are in healthcare. That is for the period 2013 to 2015. The second area where we will invest is the refurbishment of office properties, which total 93 million. And finally, we have two investment in PPPs. One is for the student housing project to be delivered for the academic year starting next September at in Brussels. And the other one is in 2014, which is corresponds to the date of delivery of the prisons, the prison we are building in the south of Belgium. With this level of investment and considering that it spreads over 3 years, and considering in addition that roughly 50% will be financed by equity and 50% by debt, if we take the assumption that we don't sell any building, that corresponds to a need for fresh equity of around 44 million to be compared with the 70 million that we raised during 2012. However, we do hope that we will be able to sell properties during this 3-year time. Regarding the forecast for the year 2013, well, we have already given you the target of 7 euro of net current result per share. It comprises the effect of the early termination indemnity for Livingstone, which was fully booked in 2012. Whilst this termination indemnity covered 21 months, if we had just spread it pro rata temporis, that would have meant that the net current result of 2012 was 7.31, and the one of 2013 7.30, so rather flattish. We give you on page 28 also the breakdown of this net current result between cash and non-cash portion, as this is reported in some of the research that you publish. I would like to stress that we continue on our strategic objective to decrease the portfolio of offices and to have it come under 40%, whilst we would like to raise our exposure in the healthcare segment to over 40%. Hopefully this will happen in the next 2 to 3 years. And regarding healthcare, we continue to stress the need to diversify and have some position not only in other countries than Belgium, like France and the Netherlands, but also to diversify between the sub-segments because of the regulatory risk that goes with the social security contribution. It is an important aspect of our strategy. This is, I think, what we wanted to present to you today. and I propose that we now open the Q&A session.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from Robert Bordemann of Kempen & Co. Please ask your question.
Good morning, gentlemen, and Valerie. A few questions from my side. First of all, your credit rating outlook was lowered in November to the outlook to negative. What are the measures you are taking not to see an actual credit rating cut, or are you already in the safe zone?
I would say that it's very difficult to predict what rating agencies will do. They do their ratings in comparison with other companies of the same sector. They don't only look at the business profile or the financial profile of the company. Clearly, we are talking to them. We are very transparent to them as we are to you. There will be a discussion, I think, by the middle of this month. With S&P, we will do our best to, of course, keep the rating where it is. However, we don't think that rating will be the main driver of our strategy and of the way we look at the structuring of our balance sheet. However, there's one measure that we have decided to take, which is to get a bit more liquidity and to cover the repayment not only of the coming year but also of the year thereafter. Mark has alluded to that. This is one of the things which came out of the discussion with the rating agency, that perhaps the liquidity corresponding to pre-financing of 1 year is not enough. But we will maintain on top of the agenda vis-à-vis the rating agency the need to have a diversified profile in our investment as well as a diversified sources debt using capital markets as well as bank markets.
Okay, that is clear. Perhaps let's go for a worst-case scenario. In the event that you would have a rating cut, what would be the financial impact, or what would be your assessment that the financial impact would be?
Well, we have around the table Ingrid Darden, who is our treasurer and a former investor relations manager. So perhaps, Ingrid, you can make a comment. You know these people.
Well, I think the first impact would rather be limited because in the existing credit facilities, we never have a pricing grid that is linked to the rating. We have a pricing grid that is always linked to the debt ratio of the company, and this is something that we can manage ourselves. So there would be no direct impact. What could be the case is that there would be a small impact on future refinancing in attracting new credit facilities, or maybe if we would like to issue a bond, then it's rather likely that there would be an impact. And this impact can be estimated between 15 and 30 basis points for new issuance.
Okay, that's very helpful. Many thanks for that. Two questions left.
I could add the following, which is, it was already mentioned by Mark, that we have now only less than 5% of the debt which is based on covenants related to LTV. By the end of the year, we most probably have zero of debt related to the LTV, but only related to the CKFI ratio, which, as you can read from the releases of today, is around 1.65% under the LTV ratio.
Yeah.
So that will give us some more headroom also. Not that we plan to use more debt. The strategy is to stay on course with the LTV or the gearing ratio, but clearly that gives us more headroom. Ingrid, agree?
We'll confirm.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. Many thanks for that. Perhaps is there any update on perhaps an alignment or prolongment of the EXA lease? I could imagine that perhaps you are proactively working on this rather large lease that matures, from the top of my head, 2017. Is there anything that you could already indicate, or is this way too early?
Well, we can say today is that we initiated almost 2 years ago an analysis of the existing situation, what the site could become in the future. So I would say the background work has started already a long time ago. Regarding the discussion with AXA, what we can say is that we are in advanced discussion with them for an extension of the lease, or rather for the signature of a new lease. But clearly we are not the only option for them. And if you want to have a sort of an horizon to see when we would get more clarity on this issue, I think we can say that around the middle of this year we should be able to communicate in probably in more detail on the topic.
Okay, and that will be roughly like a structure as seen for the North Galaxy or so?
The North Galaxy was a bit of a different scenario, because there we had a building that could be basically, the lease could be simply extended without having any works carried out in the building. In the case of AXA, the purpose is really to refurbish heavily the building. So it's slightly different. And also the other element is that the contract will be probably a new one, and probably a long-term contract rather than extension of 9 years, which we had on the North Galaxy.
Okay. Okay, that's already very helpful. Thanks for that. Last question on your full-year cash flow per share estimate for 2013, €7. In your assessment, what would this figure be after maintenance spends taken into consideration?
Well, of course, the direct costs include the usual maintenance on the building. Then I think your question is more, is there any, what do you say, renovation cost?
Yes.
That goes into the asset side of the balance sheet directly. Yes, of course there is. But as an example, AXA, when we talking about a refurbishment of the building, it's going much beyond a simple renovation. It's really a reconstruction of the building. So it's difficult to make the cut between what is usual, I would say, light renovation, which is relatively small, versus the heavy investment that go with refurbishment. But I confirm that the maintenance costs include, of course, usual maintenance. Now, when we look at the figures retrospectively for the portfolio we held in previous years, I think Mark can probably give you a flavor.
We have an aggregate maintenance capex, so which goes into P&L of roughly between 4 and 6 million, depending on the year to another. And if we take the capex, which does not go through PLN, but like Jean said, goes directly on the balance sheet, on aggregate we are around 15 million per year.
Okay. Okay. That's clear. Okay, that's very helpful. Many thanks for that. Thanks,
Robert.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Annelies Vermeulen of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the presentation. Good morning. I have a couple of questions. First of all, on these disposals, I'm under the impression that there were some disposals you were hoping to make at the end of last year, which didn't go ahead. Are you in discussions for these now, or is the market just completely dead? I mean, how confident are you that you can achieve them this year?
Yes, in contrast with previous years, in 2012, indeed, we did not dispose of significant investments. The reason is, I think, double-fold. One, the investment market in the Brussels office segment has been somewhat slower, but there are transactions. There is interest from a number of investors, in particular insurance companies, as well as some private investors, family offices. So if you look at the figures given by the brokers, one cannot say that it's a market that is totally illiquid, to the contrary. But another factor is the uncertainty on the transfer taxes. I think during the call of early August, we already elaborated on this subject. There was a new anti-abuse provision introduced in May of last year, which covers much more than the transfer of property. It covers a general safeguard rule for government income. But in relation to transfer of properties, there is an ongoing discussion with the ruling commission in order to find a solution that would preserve the possibility to dispose of assets through a long lease, a 99-year long lease. This is progressing relatively slowly, but it is still on the agenda. There were four meetings held last year. There's another meeting held in March. I hope that, let's say, by the middle of this year, there will be more clarity. The ruling commission has, however, already confirmed verbally that transaction in shares of property companies would not be affected by the new anti-abuse provision. In other words, they cannot use this provision in order to requalify any transaction done in shares. So these are the two factors. Nevertheless, I think we can say that we have some relatively advanced discussion for disposals of a very limited number of buildings for relatively small buildings as well. So we expect that we can prove that there is still liquidity in our portfolio as well during the next 6 months.
Okay, thank you. My next question is on the like-for-like rental growth. Can you give any guidance on that for 2013? Do you expect it to remain in positive territory, and do you already know how much it will come from indexation?
Like for 2013, I think there will not be a dramatic change what we have seen in 2012. We can expect that indexation will be a bit lower than 2014, so I would say a neutral figures would be a good bet.
Okay. Thank you. And then lastly, at the Investor Day in January, you hinted that you may be looking to enter other markets, maybe Germany, for example. Is there any progress on this, and is it still a priority for the company?
Well, it's an exploration for us. I mean, we are a middle-sized company, for us, going into a new geography, a new jurisdiction is, of course, an exercise that we don't take lightly. We have indeed been to that country recently. We have read many things, we have talked, we have researched, but there is nothing for the moment that is concrete on the table.
If we can make a parallel with what we did for the Netherlands, we basically took the time to understand the environment, understand the players, understand the real estate markets, understand the type of properties we could be able to buy. And this is basically a research that needs to be done in order to give us enough confidence that the market has the potential we think it has. So
okay.
I would say detailed and medium-term exercise.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Cohen Overlap Michiels of KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the presentation. My first question was about your target portfolio proportions. So at the Capital Markets Day, you hinted for a 45% healthcare segment within 2 to 3 years. Today, you're more talking about 40%. Does that mean that we should expect that a new property distribution network is popping up?
No. For the moment, we really have a priority on healthcare. We have given a slightly higher ambition during the Investor Day, but above 40% is 45%.
Okay, thank you. Then a second question. So you've just mentioned to have refinanced around 100 million during the past couple of days. Will we see there a significant increase in credit spread for those new loans versus the earlier loans?
No, they are quite consistent with what was done last year between 140 basis points and 150 basis points.
Okay, thank you very much. And then a final question is for the dividend this year. Will you choose to offer it in an option as an optional dividend?
Yes, we will maintain the optionality for shareholders as we did in the last 2 years.
Okay, thank you very much. Those were my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of J.W. van Kranenburg of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is Jan-Willem van Kranenburg. Just one question from me. Just looking at page 27 of the presentation with the investment outlay for the coming years. How much do you need to sell in order not to use additional equity for just to meet these investments?
Well, I would say the same as the volume of the investment themselves, but for the retained earnings, which is roughly 1 euro for 2013 and 2012 as well, so that represents 16 million roughly by per year times two if we use a gearing of 50%. So let's assume around 30 million could be financed without disposal, all other things being equal, of course.
So using that analogy, yeah. So using that, so if you don't meet your disposal target, say, then additional equity would be used to finance these developments.
Yes.
Okay, that's very clear. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jaap Kuin of ING. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning. This is Jaap Kuin. I have a question, and excuse me because I missed the first couple of minutes of the call, but I have a question regarding your dividend and cash flow per share levels, because you've now forecasted to cut your dividend, and you've also forecasted your EPS and cash flow per share. So my question relates to the sustainability of this new dividend. How much of this cut was related to maybe a changing view of payout ratios versus actual cash inflow per share, maybe also versus your expected conversation with rating agencies, and how should we view this your strategy around the payout percentages going forward?
Well, I think most of the discussion we had yesterday with the board was based on the dividend yield. You know that dividend yields of listed property shares, Eurozone, are now around 5% or somewhat above 5%. We have dividend yields for the CKFI varying here in Belgium from a little bit over 4%, but that relates to the residential CKFI, which dividends carry a lower withholding tax, to 6.9%. So we thought that we should base the reasoning or at least start the reasoning on, you know, what is reasonable as a dividend related to the NAV. And by the way, our share price is close to NAV, and we've seen that we have one of the highest dividend yield. Even if you take the cut of 50 cents into consideration, still the dividend yield on the Cofinimmo share remains on the high side, even within the Belgian CKFI market. So that was the starting point. Then the idea was to move the dividend in parallel to the net current result. We had in front of us the net current result of last year, the dividend of last year, and then we looked at 2013, and we said that the move should be somewhat in parallel and leave from the net current result something to be brought into the reserves of the company. That was roughly the rationale behind the decision.
Can you tell me what is your internal view on, let's say, when you think it, because of course there's the counting of the non-cash income. And I think most people are aware of your views about that. But I mean, given this cut, and I mean, obviously it's nice to have a high dividend yield. But you know, there's also, of course, situations thinkable where your share price, let's say, economic downturn, where your share price goes further down, without you actually influencing the share price yourself, and then your dividend yield is very high again. So I mean, does that then leave another opportunity for you to lower the dividend, or is this a hard bottom then?
I will ask you, perhaps Mark, to give you an answer in a minute, but I would like to just point out that we have shareholders who are both institutional and individuals. I think for individuals, often they look at the dividend and not so much at the total return. It's the opposite for institution investors. So we have tried to reach a balance there. We think that over the years the share of individual shareholders has increased because of, for instance, Solvency II. So that was also one of the concern that we had to indeed strike a balance. But Mark.
And the other argument also, an explanation maybe to give a bit more color on this decision, is we have also and quite substantially and quite consistently the last 12 months repeat that. For us also, delivering a stable dividend must be aligned with the LTV objective. And we always said that managing these non-cash items. As long as you don't distribute more than 50% of these non-cash items, you do not increase your LTV. If you just take the figures of the forecast of 7 euro, and if you deduct from that 50% of the non-cash items, it gives you a 6.22 euro per share, which is still above the 6 euro we have decided to propose yesterday. And I think that's also the reason why we can say today that the decision which was made yesterday was quite consistent with the explanation we have given in the past to defend the situation of the dividend.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you for that. Those were my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Nick Webb of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Morning, everyone. I just wanted to ask, the implications of your outlook is that you remain quite negative on the outlook for offices. I just wonder why you don't try and express that outlook just by being a more aggressive disposer of office properties in the short term rather than letting these leases run to expiry.
Javier, perhaps you can answer that one.
I think we mentioned one explanation for that, and that's the current, hopefully short-term fiscal uncertainty that we have to live with. You have to remember, you know that over the past we've always sold around 100 million euro worth of office property per year. Clearly, there is demand, there is money to be invested in the office sector, and we are a bit dependent, if I'm not saying entirely dependent, on the discussion that we are leading with the fiscal authorities. So I would say yes, we've always wanted to see some kind of arbitrage in the portfolio. So that's really something that we would like to push in the next couple of years. But at the moment, we are forced to kind of pose our efforts in that direction.
Okay, but I mean, does that mean that it's very difficult to have any confidence over values in the Brussels office market at the moment? I mean, presumably transaction volumes at these low levels mean it's difficult for your valuers and for you to know exactly what the kind of exit prices actually are.
I think we have to be pretty clear that at the moment the office market is up and running if you are selling buildings within basically if you are selling shares of companies that own buildings. That's really something that is going ahead and people are buying and selling. But as you know, we are selling assets, and so we are dependent on the structure around that type of transaction. So regarding the valuation of properties, there is market evidence, and I think the valuers are doing their job. But regarding the potential sale of office buildings in our portfolio, yes, definitely we are dependent on the discussions with the fiscal authorities.
Okay, that's fine, thank you. And if I could just ask one more question, just on the office to resi conversions. I mean, has there been any change in the economics of those? And just wonder what kind of returns you would expect to generate on just one of the typical office to resi conversion schemes that's in your pipeline at the moment.
Okay. The way we look at those is really we start by the value of the building in our portfolio. So it's not really like a developer would do a financial analysis around buying a piece of land, building and selling residential units. For us, the start is really the value of the building in the portfolio. Mm-hmm. That's one element. The second element is that it's still something that is being carried out at a fairly low volume level. So we basically the overall market historically is produced around 50,000 square meters of conversion from office to residential. Last year it was quite a bit higher than that, but overall it's an important trend, but it shouldn't be overestimated. And regarding the other elements of the rationale for converting office into residential, is that there is a certainty of liquidity, so there is a price at which the residential units are sold. There is also the question of vacancy. You know, by the time we finish the project, on average, a residential development is 70% sold, which is extremely important. And I would say 12 months later, it's entirely sold. So that's another element. And the last and not least element is that when you start a residential conversion, you can start. You don't have to wait to have kind of a pre-engagement from a tenant, an office tenant, to start the construction works. You can basically go ahead straight away, which is, you know, in the calculation, is having a strong impact on basically the return you can extract from that kind of project.
And would you say, I mean, the returns are improving? I mean, if you were to give us a typical square meter, price per square meter for an office conversion cost and price per square meter sale price on residential, I mean, how would that equation look?
Well, if you were to do that, if you take residential, let's take the Livingstone. So we are selling at around, when I say we, I mean, I explained that we had actually sold the structure to Cordel. So our risk is basically covered, including the risk of units that wouldn't be sold by the time the project is completed. But in a theoretical environment, if you were to take a residential project, you would take €3,500 per square meter. That's for basically the sale price of a standard apartment. Then you know that for residential units, you cannot sell every single square meter, so you have to deduct 10% of square meters that you are not basically selling. Then you deduct the construction cost, probably around €1,400, and then you deduct some other costs, including financial costs, which means that overall you can extract around €1,500 per square meter for basically a structure that needs total refurbishment. If you do the equation for office buildings, then I would say that an office building that with a standard contract and a standard rental level would be valued at around €2,800 to €3,000. There you know that obviously you don't lose the 10% that you lose in the residential development. Then construction costs would be around roughly the same kind of figures, and same thing actually a bit higher for the financial cost, because as I maybe didn't mention, in the residential development, the buyers are actually financing the construction costs. So overall, you land, I was tempted to say, at around €1,000 per square meter. So these are really broad figures. So, don't ask me in 6 months' time why we didn't get, or why we got over that kind of figures. But it means that you can really extract out of an existing structure that needs refurbishment around 50% more value, and that's without taking into account the liquidity and all the other issues we mentioned and the demand aspect of things. You can extract 50% more out of your existing structure if you go for residential. But again, you cannot do that overall. I mean, we have 1.5 million square meters that are empty, office square meters that are empty, and it's probably something that can be done for, if we are optimistic, for up to 20% of the current vacancy.
Okay, no, but I appreciate the indicative figures. That's very useful. Thank you very much for all of that.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel that request, please press the # key. Your next question comes from the line of Joel Gorsell of Petercam. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. I have two questions.
Hello.
In order to secure the current dividend level, were financial engineering measures like leverage on the non-cash items considered? And why weren't they used to consider the to secure the dividend?
No, they were not considered. I don't see any financial engineering that would come and make it easier or more difficult to pay the dividend. No, I
Joel, maybe you refer to what I explained with the non-cash items.
Yes, indeed.
Just to make sure that it was fully understood, we always have said that as long as we don't use to distribute the dividend more than 50% of these non-cash items, there is no impact on the LTV. And if, again, I deduct from the 7 euro forecast for 2013 50% of these non-cash items, which represent 78 cents, I get then a 6.22. So it means that 6.22 versus 6%, six euros, doesn't provide any increase of the LTV by distributing such a level of dividend. But there is no financial engineering behind.
And the proceeds of this year, as you have a higher net current result of this year, which could be transferred to next year, wasn't that considered?
No, I think from 2012, yes, we will have net current result carried forward of 7.61 less 6.50, so that's 1.11, and that's it. It remains in the company, and it increased the NAV, all things being equal.
And my next question is in relation to the office yields on page 21, and the current liquidity of the market. Could you give us a flavor on your opinion on the yields going forward, as we see that the office yields moved up, as you said it yourself, only slightly by 50 basis points from 2008 and to 2012, and it's mainly the Livingstone building. So I'm wondering for the rest of the portfolio.
Maybe some elements around that question. First, I think Jean mentioned that the main impact, and again, in certain location, in certain submarkets for some buildings, that the impact is more around rental levels than around yields. That's maybe one element. The second element is that if you look at the occupancy level of our portfolio, it has basically gone down over 2 to 3 years and was stabilized this year. So this is maybe another answer to the fact that we don't really see further strong evolution in that yield.
Good, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Marcus Vermeulen of Thames River Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. looking at just focusing on the office portfolio, 79 odd million of rent, gross rents. Can you just give us some indication as to how that profile of expiry works over the next 2 or 3 years? I'm particularly interested in the fact that indexation has obviously been taking your rents up, but the ERV has obviously been dropping, and that's been getting wider and wider over the last 3 years. So interested in what rental drop-offs you're expecting over the next 3 years. Thank you.
Well, I think we have to distinguish offices from the rest. I mean, in the rest, it's really facilities built for purpose, for healthcare or these very specific distribution networks. So I think we would rather answer your question talking about offices.
I'm only interested in the offices. I appreciate you're elsewhere. So it's just the 79.5 million on offices.
Yeah, roughly on aggregate, on average, sorry, you have about 10% of the portfolio who is renegotiated every year. The average of the last 5 years of the drop in the ERV is between 12 and 50%.
Okay, but you've got an average lease length of on your office portfolio of 6.9 or 6.7 or whatever. So I would expect more than 10% at some point in the next 3 years. So what's the figure for, let's say, the next 2 years? Is it 15? Is it 14, 13? It's clearly more than 10.
It's quite consistent what we have encountered in the last 5 years. I mean, there is no big lease expired in the next 2 years. No, besides the project we mentioned, which are clear, which are the Sciences, which will be empty by the end of this year. But for the rest, I mean, the 10% is quite consistent from a year to another.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Can I just come back on the residential convert? Sorry.
To give you a more precise answer, if you look at page 118 of our annual report of last year, you have there for all office properties individually and for the total, you have the rent and the ERV on unoccupied space on the one hand, and then you have the ERV on the total space for each building, and the difference is 3.7%.
Okay, that's very useful. Thank you. One final question on your optional dividend, slide 22. You refer to success ratio of 40.8%. Are you defining success as a bigger percentage or a smaller percentage, given the discount, given the you know what I'm going to say, but I don't need to spell it out, gentlemen. Which way? What are you hoping for, or what are you factoring in for this year?
Factoring is difficult. I think the 40% is consistent with what happened in 1 year before. The withholding tax in between increased by 4%. So the figures of this year was good, we thought. Difficult to expect what will be the figures.
Okay, but we should work on something not dissimilar. You're expecting a not dissimilar ratio this time.
Well, I think we also have to relate the score with the difference between the subscription price and the price on the market during the subscription period. It was for 2011, 2012, around 3%, or is a little bit less. You know, we announced the subscription price and it's firm in the beginning, but we don't know what the stock price will be on the market later on. So, because in I think in the Netherlands they do it by fixing the subscription price at the end of the period, or in other jurisdictions.
I think also to
mention that this goes without any fee paid to intermediaries, so it's attractive for us to do this optional dividend in terms of cost as well, or at least I would say that the fees are very minimal.
No, I understand it from that point of view. The fact of the matter is you are creating paper at a discount to your asset value, and that is because we are all aware that there is, you know, you are trying to achieve a goal in terms of dividend distribution, and it's kind of whatever we have to do to get there. But that's okay, I understand. You know, you were very clear about your two groups of shareholders, and as you can tell by my tone, I'm an institutional investor, not a retail investor, so I understand the horns of the dilemma you're on.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's star one to ask a question. To cancel that request, please press the hash key. There appears to be no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Well, I would like to thank everybody for this Q&A session, and also I take this opportunity to thank the team here who has prepared the presentation material, and don't hesitate to call on us, Valérie, Ellen, Mark, myself, Ingrid. We are all prepared to answer further questions during the coming hours or days, and we hope to see you shortly on the road, as we are going to visit a number of investors, and thank you also for preparing your reaction to this publication of figures already this morning. Thanks you again, and have a good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, bye. That does conclude our conference for the day. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.